Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Sunday, everyone.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of eWater Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of eWater Radio, KEWR-DB, or its affiliates.
Okay, well, happy Sunday, and we just have to play that disclaimer. Welcome to So What's the Point? It's Destiny Williams, and here we are. I mean, I'm exceptionally excited about this show, and it's going to be a very serious show tonight. We are going to talk about mental illness. We're going to talk about it in the industry. We're going to talk about gun control and mental illness. We're going to talk about it all, and we're really going to get into it. And I really do want to say that this is the reason why I do the show, to have these kind of conversations, serious conversations that actually really mean something. And I think that this is a conversation that really means a lot, especially, you know, I don't know if you guys heard, but one of the dads, he lost his daughter in the Sandy Hook shooting. And he committed suicide, and then two kids from the Parkland shooting in Florida, two kids committed suicide. So it's, you know, a big deal, and it really needs to be talked about. And what's going to be so amazing about the conversation, I know Mike's going to be really mad at me because I'm probably about to slaughter his last name. Mike Sidoni, I hope he got it right, and I hope he's Italian. He's coming on, and what's so amazing about him is that he does this nonprofit organization, Walk the Walk America Mental Health, and what's so great about what he does is that he opens the conversation about mental health, but yet, he's also a gun advocate. Like, he's like, guess what? I have guns. I love guns. Let's bridge the gap, and let's not make it horrible to own a gun. And let's not make it horrible to say that you'd like to have a gun. But let's be honest about the fact that mental illness is the real thing. And so how do we bridge that gap to mental illness and owning a gun and shooting up schools and doing this whole thing? And so we're really going to get into it, and I'm really excited to have the conversation. And then later in the show, we're going to have Joe Warlick on. He was on the eWater show about 2 years ago, and he talked about everything he's done in his career and everything like that. So tonight we're going to have an honest conversation with him about really get into his career and like everything that he's done and, you know, his struggles and what he's gone through and where he is now. So it's going to be an amazing show tonight. Before we get into it, before Mike calls in, I want to get into a little statistics really quick. Talking about gun violence, I want to touch on the veterans coming back from war. Do you know that 23 veterans a day commit suicide? How crazy is that? Like, think about that. 23 veterans a day commit. These are people that fought for our country and did this, and yet they feel like they have no safe place. That blows my mind. And honestly, I don't even think I'm the one to even educate you on this, because Mike is here. Mike, how bad did I slaughter your last name?
I just called. I just called it in, so I don't know. It's Houdini. It's like Houdini,
okay,
but
yeah,
so
yeah, no, I murdered it. Yeah.
You probably put letters in there that aren't there, like a R.
I probably pronounced it the black way, if that's okay.
What is the black way? What is the black way?
Just murdering it.
It's the E40 way. Just make it your own.
The E40. Ooh. But if you're now just joining in, I was just talking about what you and I were talking about the veterans. And I was looking up, do you, like, 23 veterans a day commit suicide. Insane.
Yeah, it's actually 22. That's just still an awfully large number. But, yeah.
I murdered that too. Great. Thank you.
No, it's okay. No, hey, listen, you're talking about it. That's the most important thing. So, you know. But yeah, all right, just fill me in. Where are we picking up?
We're picking up on just, I'm talking about how you are bridging the gap. And so I'll let you tell the story better than I ever could. So I'm going to give you the floor.
Okay, so obviously my name is Mike Sedini. I own a firearms importing company. I'm a third generation firearms company, so obviously we believe in nepotism. So I've been in this industry since 2006, but it's been around my family for a long time. We import firearms in the United States. We have a firearm called Bursa, which is Argentinian. We have one that's called Metro Arms, which is American Classic, Mac, Llama, and SPS. And then we're also making our own firearm. The Metro Arms is out of the Philippines. And then we're making our own gun in the United States called Avidity Arms. But anyways, I also have a nonprofit.
Wait, you're making your own gun?
Yes, I'm getting in manufacturing myself. It's a firearm called the PD-10, and it's Avidity Arms. So it's not out yet. It's not out yet, but it's coming.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, listen, anytime you want me to come on the show and talk about firearms manufacturing and why you shouldn't get into it, I got a 3-hour show for you.
Why not to get into gun manufacturing? And also, guess what you also don't get into? Having a clothing line. Tried that. Don't do it either.
Oh, yeah. I bet you we could share some stories, some headaches, some margaritas. All those things that come along when you try to build that stuff, you know. Firearms industry. In June, I was having a random dinner that we invited. My national sales manager and I invited a random stranger that we were at this crowded restaurant. She was by herself. She was there on business. Sweet older lady. We were just kind of chopping it up with her. And then we got seated. And I was like, hey, let's go grab that girl. Have her come sit with us. She didn't know anything about firearms, so she was asking us, how does the whole school shooting and mass murder thing work in our industry? Like, what happens? So I basically explained to her, I said, look, the shooting occurs. They blame the firearm. When I say they, it's people that are anti-gun, blame the firearm. We, as the 2A, when I say 2A, Second Amendment community or the firearms industry, blame mental health, then it just goes in a circle and nothing happens, right? And then you have this division. So it's kind of interesting. The lady actually says, looks me, you know, right in the eye and says, well, if you guys have identified the issue, the problem, if you say it's mental health, how do you as an industry work with mental health to kind of mitigate trauma and all the stuff that goes along with it? My national sales manager, his name is Rafael Del Valle. We were probably like 20 vodka sodas in. So we kind of looked at each other. We were like, well, we don't. I mean, I don't think we do. And that was the night that sparked the action, you know, for me to look into this even further, because my national sales manager looks at me and he's like,
mental health thing, right?
Right. Yes, the mental health thing. My national sales manager actually said to me, he's like, yeah, you know, we should be giving like a dollar a gun for every gun we sell to mental health. Now, he said it as a blanket statement, right? But it's something that stuck with me because I was like, you know what? My industry actually does care and they do want to help, contrary to popular belief, right? So I was like, I have access to all these people. Maybe I could start a nonprofit organization where we could fund the programs and policies that we see fit to help make a healthier America when it comes to mental health. So, you know, it's called Walk the Talk America. And basically we bridge the gap between firearms and mental health. So
why do you think that people have this stigma in their head, either you're for guns or you're anti-gun? Like, where do you start that bridge?
See, I feel like for the most part, it's a misunderstanding. I did not grow up around firearms. So for me, I'm not a firearms. There's a running joke. They call me the ungun gun guy, right? Because I'm not into guns. I'm into guns, but it's not like I always use the example of a Star Wars nerd. Like a Star Wars nerd from a convention, and maybe that's unfair to call somebody a Star Wars nerd, but most people that I know that are Star Wars nerds are like, yeah, I'm a Star Wars nerd. But they could tell you about every aspect of like the Millennium Falcon, right, which is the spaceship that Han Solo flew. You know, I have friends that are absolutely...
I'm starting to take from you that you really like Star Wars.
No, I don't. I don't. It's just the perfect example. It's the example that every generation can relate to, right? So I'm not a person who's just blindly like, oh, I'm so into guns and, you know, what people would stereotype as the typical gun person, which I would say is like when people who are not into guns or they're anti-gun, they have a visual of, say, like the Duck Dynasty guys, right? Like that's their thought process when they think of somebody in the firearms industry. And I don't fit that mold. So I think that there's a stigma that's placed on the 2A, once again, that Second Amendment community, that's a little unfair because if you get your news from one source, right, say one that has a more anti-gun agenda, which is CNN, right, it becomes an echo chamber. So they get facts wrong because they're not into it, right? It's not their thing. Like there are some people that walk this earth that believe that there shouldn't be guns, even though that's just impossible. It'll never happen. But we should respect that opinion. But we should also understand that that person probably has no education on firearms, right? They don't understand the culture. They don't understand safe gun ownership. They don't understand all these things. So I think it's more of a misunderstanding about the community. And there's blame on both sides. There's blame on the anti-gun community for not trying to understand the gun community. And then there's also blame on our side for not policing our own in many instances or speaking out in certain situations. I mean, it's a tough call, you know, but that's, you know, for me, that's what's always been, have these discussions with the most anti-gun people and just get through it without getting emotional, because I do respect, I'm a big amendment person. I believe in freedom of speech. You know, I believe in a lot of the amendments.
Do you think that maybe that plays a lot into it? Because when you see the Second Amendment people, they're like, we're all about our amendments. We're all about our rights. And you're trying to take our rights away.
I think that is a big part of it. But essentially, you are trying to take somebody's rights away when you regulate something by government. So whether that's alcohol.
But how can you, when people do that, this is my thing. And I'm going to say it out loud. This is my thing. Like, you had the same people that say that or the same people that say you can't have an abortion. So that's kind of where the wires get kind of crossed, where it's like, wait a minute. Oh, God. You want your guns. You want this. You don't want people to tell you what to do. You want small government. But at the same time, you want to control what women do with their bodies.
I think that is a – so, for example, like, there's variables to everything, right? And I agree with you. There's a lot of people in the 2A community that are pro-life, right? And wherever you fall in that spectrum, or what side of the fence you're on that. Everyone has a right to their opinion, and I get it. I am a pro-choice person. That's how I grew up. I have no problem admitting these things. I'll explain to people why, right? I find it odd when you see hypocrisy from both sides of identity.
Right.
Politics. I see it on the far right, and I see it on the far left. I think it's fascinating that it, and I always play this game, like when I meet strangers, like, let's play a little game, like hot topics, right? There's certain topics in life that get people heated. It could be religion. It could be abortion. It could be firearms. It could be immigration. It could be death penalty. It could be gay marriage.
What's the golden rule they tell you? Don't talk politics, religion. You know what I mean? Because those are the things that get people fired up.
But what you find is when you get in a scenario where everybody likes each other and they're just having a good time, and you throw it out there like that, what you'll find is, like, it's amazing to see how people will pick certain aspects of life. It goes back to what you're saying. You know, how could you be so anti-government, anti-establishment, don't tell me what to do, don't tell me what to do in my life, and then try to take away an abortion, right? Like, you get in these scenarios where you can go around the table and we can hit those eight topics. And if there's four of us, we could not see eye to eye. But for the most part, I think we will, right? Like, two of us could be religious. The other two could be, like, atheists, or one could be agnostic. So it's complicated. And for the most part, I feel you on that, in the sense that I do think that there is this – I think it's more Republicans that are pro-gun, wouldn't you say?
Yeah,
conservatives.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But I don't understand why that's so, because – when you and I were having the conversation the other day, and we said it's common sense, meet in the middle, right? Because I own a gun. I take very good pride in my gun. I told you, I got a .44, it's got a laser, it's got a light. I love my gun. You know, but
right.
What did I tell you? I'm like, you walk in my house at night when I'm a woman alone, I'm blowing your kneecaps out, period. But what I'm not doing is mishandling my gun. What I'm not doing is misusing it or going out in the street carrying it like a thug. I'm not thugging my gun. It's strictly for protection.
Right, and that is the argument that would be made to the anti to a crowd, right? Is why this is unfair for you to take away my right or make my right hinder my right, right? Like, why do I have to pay because somebody else screws it up? Like, for some reason, we don't see the same passion when it comes to, say, alcohol, right? We all know that when we're out
They did that. They did the prohibition. So they did do that. They tried that. It didn't work.
And it didn't work, right? But that's
it didn't work.
Okay, so apply prohibition to firearms, right? Like, you know, you know, we talked about this when we talked the other day. It's kind of interesting. I do not care about certain things in life, right? So what I like, maybe the next person doesn't. And I remember a conversation with my mother. She was bitching about her new husband's tools. And she says he has 18 screwdrivers, right? 18 screwdrivers. She said to me, who needs 18 screwdrivers? And my roommate was sitting next to me and he goes, well, who needs 18 lipsticks? You only need one.
Ooh.
And she shut right. Like,
that'll shut it down real quick.
Right. For you and ooh. We talked about this the other day. How many guns do I bring in the United States? Remember I told you that number. It's crazy when you think about it. I'm a small person and I bring in 50,000 to 80,000 firearms a year. Right? In a good year.
But what I talk about is, how is that even legal? You know what I mean? Like, people never would think that that's a real thing that you do. You know what I mean? People don't even think about that.
No, they never thought about it until the movie Lord of War came around, which my life is nothing like, but I let people use their imagination when they think of me. Like, that's how,
sure.
I want you to think of it. I'm like, oh, yeah,
sure.
Lord of War. Yeah, exactly. So then I become a human meme, like, what my mother thinks I do, what my friends think I do, what I really do.
All of a sudden,
so.
You all beat up.
Yeah, exactly.
But seriously, but people don't think about this. But what I want to rewind the conversation to what you and I were talking about. And then we're going to get back to the mental illness, but we really needed to get into what you do and why you're on the show. But they don't think about it, and then you start involving.
Yes, when there are tragedies, obviously when there's youth, when there's people that just are going to the movie theater and they lose their life just randomly doing a regular thing that everybody should be enjoying, that's when it gets emotion. That's when emotion comes into it, right? And the confusion or the outrage basically happens when you look at it, when you frame it up like that, and you don't think about suicide, and you don't think about all these other aspects of life that are horrible. How many people die in car accidents? How many people do this? I think that that is what gives people the right to question and be angry about firearms. Because, like, who am I to not listen to somebody who is anti-gun because they just saw 17 kids get massacred by a violent person? You know, it's a tough one.
And you would say that that's a mental illness thing? Like, for someone to walk into a school or a theater and do something like that, would you say, like, from your nonprofit and listening to people, I'm pretty sure you hear all kinds of stories. Would you say that that is a mental illness thing?
No, I would say it's not. I would say that...
What, you're really?
Mental, yeah, I would say that violent people... See, there's so many variables that you have to look at. I think it's dangerous to say it's a mental illness thing because that stigmatizes mental illness, if that makes any sense. It's hard to wrap your head around it, especially if you... It's not something you really think of because when you... When you think of somebody doing that, to the average person, which me, you, probably every one of your listeners, we would never do that, right? So we have to have a reason. We have to say it's a lunatic. It's a crazy person with a gun, and that's actually stigmatizing language that makes other people that actually battle mental illness not want to step forward and deal with their issues. But there are different – there's a lot of layers to it, right? It's how you – look at it from every angle, how you were raised, what kind of trauma or crisis you've dealt with in your life. Do you have violent tendencies? Do you have substance abuse problems, right? There is no predictor of violence except previous violence, not mental health diagnosis. Like that, if there's anything that I want your listeners to understand tonight, the only predictor of future violence is previous violence, not mental health diagnosis. If that makes any sense.
Well, you're saying something very important. And so let's really dissect what you're saying. Okay. We can really get into that. Because like you said, if someone's walking into a school and like, I'm literally getting emotional and shaking right now. You're going to walk into a school and you're going to kill kids. I would think you're crazy. And you and I talked about that word.
Right.
You and I talked about the crazy word, and you said that's not okay to say that word because it's not, it's like calling a woman fat. There's trigger words that you don't say, and I don't think people really understand that. But that's how people think of it because it's unfathomable.
It's pure evil, right? It's beyond.
Right. So how do you not think that they're – okay, if someone's bipolar – that's a mental illness, right? I wrote it all down. So I got like a lot of them. So what they're diagnosing as mental illness, depression, anxiety, bipolar, and attention disorder, obsessive compulsion.
Right.
So there's a lot of things they're considering.
Keep going.
Mental.
Keep going. Arachnophobia.
Right.
Fear
you could go
spider.
All day.
Right.
How about being human beings? Like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Well,
we all suffer
that's
from
the danger
something.
Of it. Right. And that's the danger of it. That's the danger of classifying, like, for example, after Parkland, Trump gets on camera, right? And what does he say? He says something horrible, right? He says it's a maniac with a firearm. Now, I'm not going to blame what he said. I get it, because I have a lot of people that say the same thing, right? The maniac with a firearm.
Let's talk about what he said after Charlottesville.
Well, yeah,
that
I mean,
whole
let's
thing
not go down that rabbit
crazy
hole. This
too.
Show will be five hours
but
long.
But the whole thing was crazy.
Right. And that's the thing that we got to be careful of, though. And to be fair to Trump, Obama did it too. Right. It's a mental health issue. It's a mental health issue. Like I said, it's so hard finding the next school shooter or finding the next October 1 shooter is literally like finding a needle in a haystack if you're going to go looking for him.
But no, we talked about this with the Parkland thing, because he posted things, he said things, he let people know he was going to do it. So I also think that when people are telling you, I'm going to do something, or I'm going to commit suicide, I'm feeling this way, we need to pay attention.
But we need to pay attention, but we got to be careful as well, too, right? Because there's other amendments that this crosses over on. Like, there's HIPAA laws that this crosses over on. There's freedom of speech laws that cross over. Listen, if I listen to a Weeknd album, especially his early albums, or I listen to Future, we should be showing up at Future's house. No, you're laughing, but you know I'm right.
No, but that's such a good point, though. Like, that is such, like, I'm sorry, but that is such a good point. Like, if you listen to any rap album, I'm a pull up. Like,
yeah. Like, so we have
seriously
to be careful with that. It's so one of the things that I've wanted to do with my organization, and there are people in the mental health community that will argue with me on this. And I don't care. It's because what I believe, and I'm passionate about it, is I don't believe that we can find the next school shooter by mental health diagnosis. I don't. I firmly believe that that's impossible, because take one
I'm
of
I'm
going
to disagree with you, but I want to hear what you have to say, but I'm going to disagree. Go ahead.
Okay, right. Because you take one of those kids or one of these guys that walks into a movie theater, and they have some sort of personality disorder, or sometimes people blame it on the medication they were taking, or sometimes people blame it on not taking medication, right? There are so many people that will have and mimic those same personality traits that would never hurt a fly. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
So
the one reason why I got to disagree with you is this, because I believe that there's signs, okay? You don't just pop up and wake up one day and say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to mass murder 18 people. You don't just wake up one day and do that. There's signs. There's neglect. Like, and I feel like every – and honestly, I feel like every mass murderer is a little child inside of them that wasn't heard. There wasn't – you know, they weren't paid attention to. They were neglected. They had some trauma in their life. So that's the one reason why I'm going to disagree with you, because I feel like that they were neglected.
Right, but I also want to point out that some of those same things that you just mentioned, I was. Right? And then there's other
You're
people
right,
that are probably
but
listening.
They handled it differently,
yeah.
though.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. There's no magic wand. There's no, go through a metal detector and we figure this stuff out. So it's very dangerous when you start limiting people's access to stuff that – So, okay, let me give you a prime example, right? And I'll break it down for you. And like I said, these are the great hard conversations to have, right? Like these,
of
right
course.
Now, you have some listeners that are feeling me, and then you have some listeners that are absolutely feeling you, right, and everything you're saying. But so when I started Walk the Talk America,
but we're
which is
on
a
the
nonprofit,
same page. We agreed. We meet in the middle, you know?
Right, right. And you need to keep having these discussions, because if you don't have these discussions, then we cannot evolve or think of how to make it better. Or maybe you'll say something that I never thought of while you have these conversations. But
absolutely.
I want to share this story real quick, because it's crazy, right? It's a wild story. When I first started the organization, I had a friend who called me one day and he said, I have a buddy that does fundraising. She likes to raise money for nonprofits. She wants to meet you and talk to you. And I kept saying, well, what is this about? What does she want to meet? Oh, she just wants to talk to you and kind of ask you about your organization. So I sit down with her at lunch with my friend, and we go through this whole thing. And basically, I get done talking for like 25 minutes about my organization, and she says, I'm going to tell you something about me a couple years ago. I had an incident where if I had access to a firearm, I wouldn't be here right now telling you this story. So immediately I think she's going to go all anti-gun, right? Like, I'm like, oh boy, like access to a firearm, where is this going? And she goes, what I love about what you're doing with your organization is that you are battling against the stigma that's put on people that have mental health issues. And I was like, yeah. She's like, the reason why I almost got to that crisis mode is because I didn't want to lose my job. So I didn't tell anybody anything was wrong until it almost got that bad. And she didn't have a doctor that was in tune with her to understand what she was going through to get her help, she would have done something drastic. So
right.
We leave at lunch. I was like, that's awesome. Like, I touch somebody that doesn't even like guns. Like, I love the fact that what I was saying, my organization, everything did that. Later on that night, I'm on the phone and I call this influencer in my industry who's a writer. And I tell him all about Walk the Talk America and how I want him behind it and everything like that. I need his support. And he says, Mike, he goes, I'm going to tell you something that I never told anybody else. He goes, I did 2 tours in Afghanistan. When I came home from Afghanistan, I suffered from PTSD really bad. He said, if I didn't have my gun in the gun range, I wouldn't be here right now telling you this story. And I got chills. Because I was like, holy shit. Holy, you know, crap. Like,
$5,000 fine. $5,000.
Sorry, I don't know. All right, look, I'm gonna keep it real, like, G-rated. No, but, like.
PG-13 is fine.
PG-13, there you go. The person was like, I cannot, you know, I didn't want to lose my clearance. I didn't want to lose my job. I didn't want to lose everything I had. I didn't want to lose my gun rights. But the range and the firearm is what kept me sane. So it goes back to what I was saying. Like, it's hard to kind of paint it with such a broad brush where you're saying a person who was neglected, a person who was in love. You know this. Look at every person that comes from an underprivileged, underserved community. Like, ask them about the trauma that they have, the things that they see. You know, many of them, if they were to explain to you what they've seen or what they've been through.
And that's such a good point, because you have, like, kids growing up in a hood. Like, I saw my cousin get shot. I saw this. I saw, you know what I mean? And it's like, they don't go out committing mass murders.
No, think about that. Like, think about that, right? So you got to, like, take Parkland, which is a very affluent, like, community. You actually, like, want to get to Parkland. That should be a goal of every human being, because it's considered you've made it, right? So now you have a lot of these kids walking around saying, I don't feel safe in schools. I don't feel safe in schools.
A lot of black kids from the hood saying, I never felt safe.
Well, how about this? You got more black kids in Oakland, California, right, that are saying I feel safe in school. It's getting from school and home that I don't feel safe, because that's where I'm walking over chalk lines, right? Like, it's kind of a plot twist. You know what I mean? Cause
isn't that messed up? Like, how do you even be like, that's such a, I'm sorry, that's such a mind F. I can't drop the F bomb, but that is crazy.
Right.
Like, let's dissect that. Like, how can you be sending your kids to this amazing school, doing these amazing things, right? You worked your ass off, and your kids are in this amazing school, but they can go to school and feel safe. Yet, you in a hood, but you feel safe.
You feel safe in your school because that's where you're not walking over the bodies, and you're seeing your friends die. And you, I mean, it's a powerful thing when you think about it, but it's reality, right? And
that's crazy.
It goes,
but why do you think that, like, kids from the hood or, like, grew up how we grew up, like, how do they not have the same, and this is a stigma, and I really want to get into it, and I don't want to make it a black and white Mexican thing. I don't want to really do that, but what I do want to say is that how do you grow up seeing so much trauma coming from the hood, but yet, you still got to survive and do what you have to do, and you don't go nutsky like that. How do, and I really feel like, how do, And I do think that black men, they struggle with that. You know what I mean? They don't want to admit mental issues. They don't. That's not a thing in our community.
Well, I think that goes back to the variables, right? Like all the things that this, why this is not easy to solve. But I have a saying. It's not a good saying in terms of when you think of mental health and you think of suicide. But I say those that are comfortable looking down the barrel of a gun, you can't break them, right? Like, do you know?
What did I say the other day to you, and you didn't like it, but what did I say? You can't solve crazy. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it.
It's true. There's elements to that that are true for particular people, right? But not as a whole.
Right.
So that's what makes it tough. And it sucks. Talking to me is very difficult because I'm always going to draw back to be careful. Let's not blanket statement paint with a broad brush.
Right.
There's things that I think we can do that can cast a wide net. And maybe we catch some of these people that go through crisis mode and snap. Never will it ever be solved. You're still going to have evil. I believe there is evil in this world.
There's evil in the world. But what you were saying is that there is warning signs sometimes. But what I think is really important that you said is protecting your amendment. And that's kind of goes back to like the gun thing. You're an amendment person, so it's like freedom of speech, freedom of this, freedom of gun, you know. So that really plays into if someone's posting something and someone's literally giving signs to that they're going to do something crazy, you don't want to really like be like, I'm calling the police on you. That's your First Amendment. You have a right to say whatever you want to say.
Right. You have a right to have bad days. You have a right to your privacy in certain aspects. And unfortunately, we're getting to a point where some of that stuff may be getting a little blurred. And it depends on what side of the fence you stand on. And I believe that for the most part, people do believe in their own rights until it's something that they disagree with or don't care about. Like the Second Amendment.
What do we draw the lines with that, though? We're like, where do you say the lines are drawn where it's like, okay, I'm concerned. Like where do we as Americans draw that line?
If I had that answer, we'd be owning radio stations. No,
did I stump the weatherman?
Yeah, exactly. The weatherman doesn't have to be right all the time. No, I don't know where the line should be drawn, but I do know that it's irritating to me. So, for example, like there is a big thing with red flag laws these days, right? And red flag laws are put in 13 different states right now, and there are certain states that are trying to pass them to where somebody can.
I'm sorry, I have no idea what a red flag law is. Can you explain that?
Okay, so red flag laws are like emergency protective orders. So basically, let's just use the example of I'm your brother, and you come over to my house, and I say that I see demons and I have a gun in my hand and I'm at my behavior is bizarre, where you could basically red flag me by calling the police and having the police come and they could potentially confiscate my guns, right, with little or no due process. But that the scary part about that law, those laws, is they could be used in scenarios where people have a vendetta against you or they have an issue with you, right? So you as my sister who thinks is really scared and thinks something's going to happen, you might be calling the police with best intentions to get the firearms away from me. But you as my lover who just caught me cheating and I'm breaking up with you, you might use that law just like people do in divorces. They throw mud and they make up stuff that potentially could get one of my rights violated. You follow me on that one? The problem with the red flag law.
I don't see a problem with the red flag law. I'm sorry, no.
Because
I feel like
you're looking at it from...
I mean, we're here for a discussion, but I feel like it should... People will always take advantage of laws. Always. But to have laws in place that matter and that help people, I think that's more important.
Okay, so let's examine that though, and let's break it down. First of all, you're looking at red flag. You're looking at red flag laws from you as a responsible Second Amendment gun owner, right? So you're looking at it as if you are responsible with your firearm and you do the right thing, these laws should never come into play, right? Like, that makes sense. Like, you'll never be red flagged.
But
you would agree with that, right?
Clearly, it's a law for a reason, though.
Right, but now let's look at it from another, look at it from the pro 2A person that doesn't like the fact that their firearm could be removed without due process from them, right? So let's not even use the firearm as an example. Let's use a car, okay? So Destiny and Mike, this relationship, right, it doesn't go the way I want it to, and I tell the police officers one day, Destiny shouldn't have her keys. She shouldn't be driving. She's dangerous. You know, go over there and take her keys from her. They come and take your keys, and they take your car, and then you have to prove to the government that you're fit to get that car back. So there is the
You're saying
part,
the due
right?
process thing about it is not done. Like, just like proven you're guilty before you've been proven guilty.
That is an issue. Now, every state that has red flag laws, they're different, right? But due process is the biggest thing. There's concerns. And that comes to rights and everything like that. But there's also aspects to these laws that are very, very silly. And I'll give you a prime example. Certain states like New Jersey, where I'm from, right? I live in Nevada now, but I'm from Jersey. Let's say you come over to my house and you see that I'm in crisis mode. And you're like, Mike, you don't look so good. I'm a little worried about you, brother. Like, why don't I take your guns for you? I'll just get them out of the house until you're out of this crisis mode, right? Because that's the most important thing when it comes to suicide is time, right? Every second counts. When a person gets triggered and goes into crisis mode, every second counts. So you take those firearms from my house. If I say, Destiny, please take them, okay? I'm not in the right frame of mind. Take them. Get them out of the house. You take them and you leave the house. We both committed a felony.
Why?
Like, those are certain... Because that's how the red flag law is written, that you cannot hand your gun to somebody else, that you cannot give your firearm to somebody else. And
where the dad gave when there was a mass shooting where the dad gave him his guns back, and they were talking about charging.
Yeah, that for the most part is law, right? Like there's certain aspects of firearms laws where you commit a felony if you give someone a firearm who shouldn't have a firearm. Sandy Hook, for example. Sandy Hook, the mother gave the son access to the firearms. Like, that was a pastime that she enjoyed with her son because she felt it was the only way to relate to him. She missed every warning sign of danger and irresponsibility. She hit every step of the irresponsible ladder when it came to firearms and her son. You know, that goes back to being responsible to a person. Like, that's what we're talking about, right? And that's, for the most part, that's most gun owners that buy a firearm the proper way. Because if we weren't like that, it'd be utter chaos out there. But yeah, that's one of the arguments that a lot of people on my side make, is that we should stick to the laws that are on the books and really punish the people that break those laws, leaving a firearm unlocked when you have a child, right? Like, certain things like that. There's certain aspects where the 2A community can clean up their own backyard. Originally we're going to talk about mental health.
Can we get into the NRA thing, please, really quick? Because you and I talked about this, because I'm going to set it up for you, because you and I talked about something that was really important: ignorance, not understanding what the facts really are. And when people are really ignorant, because I feel like people, when you say guns, people immediately think NRA Republicans.
Right.
And you really set me right with that. So I'm going to give you the floor.
Okay, so if I remember correctly, and go ahead and chime in if I'm off about this, is we talked about the NRA and how the NRA is kind of stigmatized as this group of people that don't care, or there's money behind tragedy with it, and why people hate them so much. Is that what you're going? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, and also, I mean, we talked about them commenting and, like, the mental health thing. Like, I don't – what's the woman that's, like, in charge of it? And after Parkland happened, they had her do a town hall.
Okay, that was
Dana. And they embarrassed the hell out of her, and I don't feel like that was fair.
Right. So, okay, yeah, I know where you're going with this. Okay, so the thing with the NRA, and that's the National Rifle Association – that people need to understand this, is they are a Second Amendment advocacy group that steps on their tail all the time. So if they stuck to second rights advocacy and basically explain to people in a manner, now they would probably turn right around and say to me, we explain all the time, no one cares, they're not going to listen, anti-gun this, anti-gun that. But what they are is a Second Amendment advocacy group, period. That's what they are. Now, where they sometimes is they'll comment on certain things when there's police shootings or things like that. And then other times they'll go completely silent, like the Castro case in Minnesota. And I think that confuses people, because then people look to them and say, well, you should have a comment on everything. Why are you quiet now? Right. So that's
right.
What they do. And there's this misconception about firearms. And that goes back to the education piece that we talked about earlier in the show, that certain people make judgments on firearms and don't understand clearly why people are saying you can't ban ARs, you can't ban assault rifles, because by the language of the banning, people don't understand that you're going to ban all firearms. So there are people.
You
got to
get into that, because I don't think people really understand what you're saying when you say that, because you had to check me when I talked about the bun stocks. She's like, that's not a real thing.
Yeah, it is. It isn't a real thing. So when we were having this conversation, remember you said, I do not believe people should own ARs, automatic weapons, those type of things.
I don't think
right?
that you should be able to kill 25 people in 25 seconds.
Well, right. And remember what I told you, I said, you can't do that. There's no one can buy an automatic weapon. To buy an automatic weapon is a very, very difficult process, which takes a lot of red tape and a lot of money. So basically you and I can't just go around Vegas or go around any of the gun shops that are in Arizona or California and find an automatic weapon. Now we might be able to get an automatic weapon, you know, on the street somewhere, if we have connections like
right,
that,
from you.
We're part of the cartel. No, not for me. But it goes down to the basic understanding of semi-automatic versus automatic, right? So semi-automatic, which ARs are, is one pull, one shot. Automatic is you pull the trigger and you hold it, and it rapid fires. Assault rifles are one. Like ARs, the AR-15, which you see in the media, is one pull, one shot. That's it. So it's just like your Glock 19 or your
like
Versa
a shotgun,
380.
Basically.
Yes, shotgun is the same concept. One pull, one shot, right? So that's where it gets confusing, because people see the AR-15 and it looks a lot like the M4. It looks like the firearms that you see in the movies, where you see Rambo just blasting off a ton of rounds. But that's the confusing part, and that's the, you know, and that's where people become emotional, because when you believe that you could just walk into a store and buy the same gun Rambo used to destroy a bunch of people in a movie, then of course you're going to get emotional, and of course you're going to come out of your seat, and of course you're going to be like, we need to stop this. What they didn't realize, or what most people don't realize, is that that's not the case. I saw the same thing you saw. I saw the CNN town hall where they took Dana and they put her out there. I believe that was a
very thought that was disgusting for them to do that to her.
Right. And I've I'm impressed that Dana was able to do that. She isn't the person I would have rolled out because Dana is very polarizing. And although she's beautiful, and actually, if you know Dana, I've met Dana before. She's a lovely lady, and she's a woman that defends the Second Amendment. But that was kind of – this is going to be a funny example for you and your listeners. To me, that was like me fighting Ronda Rousey. And I say this because I'm not going to win either way. So if I get
– right.
You know, if I beat up Ronda Rousey, that's great, Mike. You beat up a girl. If I lose to Ronda Rousey, Mike just got his ass kicked by a girl. So what they did with Dana, rolling her out in an emotional state, which everyone had the right to be in that state, all those kids, they were fired up. They were charged up. They just saw their friends die. They just got shot at, their parents, everybody. That I wouldn't even have done that. It was not the time to go out there and have a debate. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it wasn't a debate situation. Really quick. So I've got Joe calling in, Joe Warlick, and anyone that knows him, Joe Warlick, Grammy winning and done amazing things. And he really wants to get into this conversation. So I'm going to plug him in really quick and introduce him. Joe, can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Oh, shit.
All right,
just got
Joe,
the radio
I can hear you. Okay, yeah.
I think I can hear you right now, too. Hello?
Okay. Don't make me beat you up, Joe.
Diddy, all right. You ain't going to beat me up. It's all good.
Okay.
A little bit of confusion coming in.
Somebody's got to turn the radio down.
Yeah. We're honestly going to have an amazing conversation.
I'm here.
I know you're here, Joe. Turn your TV off.
Okay, I'm here. Here I am.
Okay. I'm like,
what's good?
Anyone is to know,
sorry
Joe
it took
Warlick
me so long. I know I'm a little bit late.
Joe Warlick is a diva. And we've got Grammy winning.
Diva,
Joe,
that's
I got
so
like,
that
seriously,
shit. Absolutely.
Diva. And by the way, I do have to say, before Joe came on my show, do you guys know that he cursed me out, hung up in my face, and told me that he's not coming on my show? Yeah, that happened.
Okay,
so Mike, I need to get a gun to shoot him.
Didi, I know you for a long time. Let's talk about the shit. Hey, I didn't want to come on the show, honestly, because can I tell you, listen, honestly, because a little brother of mine passed away today. And we're talking about mental illness, all bullshit aside. A little brother of mine passed away today.
Great.
That's four people in the past 3 weeks that have died.
$15,000. $15,000 in fines. Thank you, guys.
Cool. I'm going to cuss my ass off because Nipsey passed away today, and it's like it's all good, you know?
All right, let's do this. Bring it.
Hey,
all right. So,
how
you doing, brother? Good. Very
I'm
nice
good.
To meet you. I've been
nice
listening
to you too.
Guys for like the past half an hour. It's all love. You know, I have kind of like a similar perspective, but you know, it's let's talk.
Let's hear it, Joe. What's your perspective of what we've been talking about?
Well, I mean, as far as like mental illness. And as far, like, because you guys have kind of been bouncing around from some things, I more agree on what kind of like he was saying, because it's like, it's all, everything is subjective. Like, it's, I don't know. I mean, let's start from scratch so I know what's going on for real.
Well, first of all, let's touch on one point. And Joe, you mentioned this. Nipsey passed away today.
Absolutely.
That's an absolute tragedy.
So my mind totally is on that. No matter how prepared I like for this, you know, conversation, that just adds something that is so pertinent to what we're talking about. You know, a lot of musicians deal with like a lot of different things, but as far as in the genre, and it's like for the past 3 years, I've worked on like probably every gangster record, every a lot of fucking real records. My little brother Carlos has worked on a lot of records. I stopped working on stuff based on content 3 years ago, and you know what the artist said when I'm like, yo, I don't know if I'm going to work on this record because of content. They're like, oh, we don't got to cuss on the record. We don't got to talk about this on the record. We're writers. Like, you understand what I'm saying? So I really believe in life you can speak shit into existence. And this is what people got to understand. I'm not talking
Joe,
about the
Nipsey
shit.
Joe, cuss one more time. Joe, cuss one more time.
I won't cuss anymore. I promise. But as far as, like, the Nipsey stuff, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying he's speaking shit into existence. Sorry. I'll pay that fine.
What did I just
say? I know. But it's, I don't know. It's just, it's shocking and it's not cool at all.
Yeah. Nipsey was definitely doing big things in the community. He was giving back a lot. And there's, I saw a lot of people are concerned with Big Pharma and possibly with his documentary coming out, which kind of ties right into mental health. So,
well, the other thing too is the fact that Nipsey was from Eritrea, so it's like, you know, he was African, just like, you know, my mm-hmm. little brother Sandman. It's almost 2-3 years to the day that Sandman was murdered. Nipsey was murdered, and they're African. They were, like, born in Africa, Eritrean, and you know, like, a lot of my family, I have a lot of family from L.A. that are gangsters and that are, like, you know, from different sets or whatever, but I became family with them through music, through, you know, I get a pass, first of all, because I'm born in L.A., second of all, because of the records I've done. So I never fear anywhere I go in L.A. It's crazy because I guarantee you, once you get into music, you're not a gangster no more. Music puts you into a category to where it's not about what you talk about. It's not about gangster stuff or anything like that. It's about the music. So, you know, also with that, it's like people listen to what people say and then they add on to that. So this, I have no idea what, I just literally found out about this, you know, a couple hours ago, and you know, I'm preparing for the show, preparing for my friend Destiny, who's awesome, you know, who I love so much, who I'm going to give like a hard time to and be like, yo, I'm not going to be on your show or whatever, but she knows me. It's more to like press her to be to be prepared. But then who could have thought that this would happen? Like, this adds to the mental illness. This adds to, like, you know, even in things in my life, to know how me, you know, working in studios, I've seen a lot of interesting things. And, you know, one of my little, you know, Cone Heldens, who is Triple X's engineer, you know, being like kind of like his, somebody that he looks up to as an engineer. But then also when Triple X died and he got murdered, you know, I tried to tell him, well, this is part of, like, this is part of the game. This is part of what's going to help your engineering be legend. My little brother Carlos mixed all the Tupac's records. So he, like, he actually mixed Me Against the World, which was before Death Row, and then All Eyes on Me. But to have,
you know,
somebody,
Joe,
that's our friend pass away,
it's
crazy.
That I, like,
I'm sorry,
like, on the mental illness, like, remember when you mixed Macy Gray and you were like,
yes,
calling me like, yo, she's crazy. Remember, like, you, like, and it's like that whole artist thing. Where it's like,
yeah,
artists have always been crazy, and there's that stigma.
Yeah, it's more than,
you know,
a stigma. I mean, it's not really a craziness, because people from day to day, like, people can work at Ralph's.
Mike, you told me not to use that word. I'm
like,
sorry, Mike.
No, it's all good. But, I mean, you understand what I'm saying? It's like, suicide. Somebody can kill themselves if they work at Ralph's or if they you know, work in the music industry or whatever. It's mental illness is something that is, it breaks genres. Where music comes in is music is one of the things that can heal, that can help mental illness, that can help people. Because I know, like, I've been sad or depressed, and then I listen to a song that makes me happy. Or I can listen to a song that makes, that reminds me of my mom who passed away. Or music is really the only thing, and it's proof. Like, they just came out with a study of, like, Alzheimer's. So music breaks all that to where, you know, people with Alzheimer's, they, music helps them, like, smile, be happy, like it breaks, that frequency breaks everything. And this is why I think it's so important, you know why music is so important, because that's the only thing that's going to unite the world, that's going to heal people. And it's like, it's a big part of medicine and it's a big part of healing. And you know, we're really learning about that right now, and you know, the whole thing.
Mike, you have something to bounce off that?
Well, there's certain.
I'm glad I came on right now because I want to get deep.
That's awesome. I know, right? Like a very depressing episode. No, there's an aspect of
absolutely. Like, I don't know what.
No, but back to your point, I think there's a very awesome thing there, and I know you were trying to find the words for it. But
yes, it's hard.
Music, no, it's hard, right? Because music, what people don't understand is that was a way to kind of break the stigma, right? So, like, when kids were hearing a Cudi song, right? And he would, like, a soundtrack to my life, for example, right? We said, I got some issues that nobody can see, and all these emotions are pouring out of me, right? Like, so maybe you can't talk about your mental health issues, or you feel like you're in an environment where you can't, where your dad might smack you for it or whatever.
Right. Well, you can listen to a record and that will heal you.
And you're not alone anymore.
Exactly how you're feeling at that time.
Right.
You know,
you're not alone anymore. Now you're in a room with Cudi and you're like, wow, he thinks the same way I do. Like my dad died. I haven't been right since. There's little lyrics. There's phrases that change people's lives. Boom, just like that.
Absolutely.
You know,
like Triple X, Stevie Wonder, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you guys this. As an artist, how much responsibility do you have if that's the way that people look at you? That one little lyric changed someone's life.
Zero.
None. Really?
Zero. Zero responsibility, because just like being the greatest plumber in the world, or the greatest person that works at Ralph's, you're thinking about this is what makes me happy as a human. And maybe because if I'm at Ralph's, I stock everything perfect and like people are happy to come in the aisle and like be like that. It's the same thing with music. It's the God complex is what killed music, because people started thinking we're creators. We created this. We're this. We can fuck. I mean, pardon my language. We can sleep with any woman.
Oh, I'm gonna kill you.
This and that. But you. But I'm sorry. But you understand? That's a false idea.
But you,
I'm gonna
100% disagree with you. You and I can't even believe you're saying that, because as an artist, and
no, I'm not saying.
You're
not listening to what I'm saying. I'm saying that that's wrong. Like, you understand? The God complex is a false idea. So how can you disagree with me? I'm not saying that that's the positive idea or that's the right idea. I'm saying that's the false idea. The God complex is what messed up the music industry. It's like, just because you can create a song that millions of people love, that doesn't mean you can do whatever you want to do. No. That doesn't mean, like, it's millions and, like, even the money situation, it's you got to do something that you love. You don't care, like me, for example. I don't care about money. I don't care about I care about, you know, creating through energy, and that's not me too. It's like a lot of times when I start I start a song from the end, I have no idea how it got to the end. I just know that the energy came through me. The artist is happy. Like, it's a creation process. It's like there's no rhyme or reason to the end result. You know, it's the egos that, like, really kill. And then also, even with what happened today with Nipsey, that definitely is about ego. That definitely is about something that's not, you know, that's not part of God or not part of belief or of positiveness. And when I talk about God, ego is edging God out. It doesn't matter what you believe in. So if somebody doesn't believe in something, that is the most dangerous thing in the world because they have nothing to answer to. It doesn't matter if you believe in Allah and Buddha or Jesus Christ or whatever. You have to believe in something, even music or even yourself, to do something positive to change the world. Even if you're an atheist, you have to believe in something. The people that don't believe in nothing, they can do what happened today with Nipsey. They can do all that. The ego, whatever it was over. So that's where music comes, because music tells the story of, without using a religion, with using something that is common for everybody, music uses that to tell the story, to really help people think and not do stuff like what happened today. And I don't know all the what, you know,
the details of the murder.
Yeah,
the circumstances, but this is something that's shocking. And it's like, I'm so glad that you talked about, you know, because the first topic that you told me about what this show was going to be, I didn't really like that. You're like, let's talk about mental illness, because you've known me for a long time. If you see me super, super sad when I have a Grammy nomination or when I'm like on top of the world and you've seen me just sad and you're like, why are you so sad, dude? You have something to be proud of, but it's a lot of moving energy is a lot of burden. Let me tell you, it really, really is.
So, but, Joe, how does that
yes,
come
sir.
Through? Let me just ask you a question. I'm a student of life, and I'm it's Destiny. Thank you for saying the artist. I'm not an artist. I draw a mean stick figure. Mm-hmm. I know chopstick on the
but
piano.
But you are an artist
well.
As well.
No, but I'm not. No, I appreciate that. But I actually, I'm.
You're
serious.
A gun artist.
Yeah, I'm a gun artist. That's right.
Did you
I'm
say
sure,
a
so.
Gun? I thought you said a dung artist. I'm like, dung is.
No, he's a gun artist.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, that's still up in the air. We don't know that. I could be. But I have a serious question though. So, you just kind of said, you know, I deal with highs and lows, working in the music industry, mixing music, engineering music, all these things that you've done for these big names, right? How does So someone comes to you with a record or concept of a record, how do you put your touch on it, and then does that differ when you're writing a high or a low?
Well, it's interesting with me because I never this has been my only way to make my living money, but it's also been something to where I know I put so much energy into it that I don't take every job. So for example, if you look at my credits, I would like to say, like, every one of the albums that I'm on, it means something. It's not going to be – you're not going to see me on all the, records every year, like 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 records every year, because I like to engineer. I like to mix. I like to produce. So I like taking projects on from start to finish because – It's such an adventure. I look at it as life. I look at it as when an artist comes to me when I record, it's like I got to be kind of part of their life and vice versa, because usually that's what the bigger records are about in some way. Even if they're talking about gangster stuff, it's a whole process. So, you know, and I'm not saying like a lot of – usually the path is engineers, then they go to mixing. So a lot of engineers, they're like, I just want to mix, because they're thinking about the money, the dollar to survive. But also it's the art as well. I mean, I'm not knocking that. I'm just like, I look at everything as a whole you know, like recording the album, like seeing the different producers and then going into the mixing process and, you know, and the production process.
But does it
ever,
process, like, make you emotional, like when you're doing the record?
Yeah, it's
like
hard because it sucks. It sucks so much energy out of me, and I put so much into it. I can't just, like, go and, you know, record an album every day because it's like I know, first of all, I stop doing the thing, too, of I'll either do it for nothing or I'm going to charge my rate. And when I go into a project, I look at it as, like, nobody can afford me. Period. You know what I mean? Because I'm putting so much into it. So I'd rather go and do it for nothing or you're going to pay my money. You know, you're going to pay me like what I'm worth. So it's interesting like that. And it's like I have a lot of friends and everybody's right. It's everybody's right to do music. So, you know, a lot of my friends, they don't want to pay me. They're like, but I'll tell you what I found out, they don't want to pay me. They're my friends. They want to find a reason. How come I have plaques and how come I have Grammys? And because they're not happy with themselves, they'll try to break me down. They'll try to be like, oh, I work with him, but they don't want to pay me. I don't get into that anymore. I'm like, I'll either do it for you for free or pretty much I'm probably not going to work with you because I'm already on enough stuff. I'm not going to tarnish my happiness, basically.
So,
you know,
but, okay, so having said that, Joe, sorry to cut you off, but so.
No, please.
Yeah, all right, so I come to you, I have a track, right?
Yes.
How you interpret that track is two different ways, right? And that could be affected by your mood or your mental health at the time, right?
Okay, go ahead, I'm listening.
No, I use this example, right? I was talking to my daughters the other day, and I got 5 on it from Us, right?
Yes.
Like, I always considered that a dark, creepy beat, right? The old Club Nouveau creepy
right.
beat. Right. And then when Jordan
yeah.
Peele took it and he brought it to this like creepy, dark, dark place. Right. If you see the commercial for the movie,
right.
he brings it down so much more. Right. And that's the thing. If I bring you Happy, you know, by Pharrell.
Right.
And you're in a dark space.
This is what you have to understand is the fact that anybody that brings me a record, I'm not in any place. I'm not because this is that. The music is my safe space. So
okay.
I could be mad at a chick. I could be pissed off at somebody cut me off. I could be happy because I got kissed on the cheek for my niece. I could be happy. You understand? So, but the music, that's what makes me great. What makes me great is none of that comes into until I start feeding off other people's energy. That's what makes me the frequency monster is the fact
but is that your therapy?
I look at that when people say that kind of is like they're trying to break stuff down. It never affects that because if it did, I wouldn't have the work. The projects would never ended up the way they ended up that I worked on. It has nothing. The music is my safe space. The people, dealing with people is my safe space. My mental issues or whatever are within me or with because I miss, you know, I miss a son or I miss my mom or, you know, my dog died or, you know, I was in a studio invasion to where it was like, you know, horrific. Like PTSD type stuff. It has
nothing to do
with the music. That's my expertise. It's almost like I can shut everything off when I work on an album because that's my mission. It's not going to come into that, but I feed off what other people are feeling. So if Jordan Peele wants I Got 5 on it, and he's like, he's doing Us, you know, I can interpret that and make that. It has nothing to do with my personal issues or whatever because then I wouldn't be great. Then all my greatness would be based on madness, and it's like that's my only safe spot. You understand what I mean? My greatness is based on me being able to, like, if I was shooting free throws, I can block off all the like Tristan Thompson, he's like missing free throws because they're like Khloe Kardashian or like
I can block all that shit out.
Because this is what I do. This is what saves me from the mental anguish. I don't use that as anything, but definitely it comes into play once I start reading how other people are. Then I remember it might be
you.
A song about it. Somebody might write a song about somebody about like my boy Tim Chance. He wrote a song about his mom passing away from cancer. So, okay, I come into the situation. I remember how my mom passed away, and I know those feelings. So I start putting that into the record. But I don't come into the record feeling that. This is the other thing too. When I mix a record, a lot of engineers, they'll have their same plugins or their same effects, and they'll have it already set up. When I mix a record, every record is different, so I have no idea. Like I build it from scratch when I'm mixing. Like, oh, maybe I'll put this effect on, or maybe I'll like it's all from the beginning. That doesn't make what I do wrong or right, but that's just my perspective because that's how I deal with it. If I dealt with it from any other way, it would turn into a factory of bullshit, maybe a factory of my own bullshit, you know. I just believe in, you know, every record is different. Why would I put
she's racking it
the
up
same
right
effects
now.
Or what? It's brand new. There's so much stuff I can do, and it's like it builds from that. And that's why I can't mix a record in an hour or 30 minutes or whatever. Like it's, we're allotted, they say, a 12 hours time to mix a record, a full session, you know, and it takes every minute of that because, first of all, usually when I get tracks, nothing's named, nothing's, you know, coded, color-coded or whatever. So mixing is taking all the paints and making it the picture of what the producer and the artist want. So if you think once I get a record, nothing's named, kick, this and that, how do I even know what color painted it to start? So that's what takes a lot of the time, and that's where I train other engineers to start with that, and that's why I have different great assistants, because what they do is they'll name it because they know that's what I'm going to do anyway. So that's a foundation. It's like, even if all these people do records and they think they're going to be millionaires, they don't even name their tracks. It's hilarious. You know, I know Pro Tools, I know this. They don't even name their tracks. You know, like that's the foundation. It's like you don't go to the bank and give a blank check and don't sign that check. You know?
I mean, Joe,
so,
in like honestly, like yeah. Every time we've ever done a record, like what we do, we think about the video, what I'm going to wear, how's your
everything.
Makeup going to
look.
Everything, it's a
full thing. Like, absolutely.
It's a full thing, seriously. And that's how people should approach life in general. It's a full thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. But no, it's an interesting day to day. I feel super blessed now, like, you know, to be on here with you guys, and it's like we're going to build and we're going to really make a change, like, for sure, because I don't know everything. You know, this is just my opinion, and it's like I respect your guys' opinion, and I know that everything that has happened, even in the past couple weeks, is supposed to happen, and we're going places. Trust me, you know, because all this other bull crap that's going on is no bueno.
We got about 10 minutes left, and I want to ask both of you.
Yeah.
We're building bridges. Everything that's going on with our country, how do we start and end the conversation about mental illness, about admitting you have a problem and not being ashamed of it? Or maybe, honestly, so what's the point with Destiny Williams? I'm going to say I think we all have issues. I think we all have issues. So just single out someone having this particular issue or this particular issue, I don't think that's fair. I think we all have a problem. So how do we bridge the gap? How do we start the conversation? Go ahead, you guys.
We're supposed to solve it in 10 minutes. She's like, you got 10 minutes to solve all the world's problems. Go. No, I will say this.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. she backed out of the room, very like the Homer Simpson going into the bushes, like, yeah. How do we solve this?
He's like,
how
go.
Do we bridge the gap? Here I go. I'm in the bushes now. No one can see me. Goodbye. No, honestly, I think it starts with having these hard conversations. So, like, this show is
yes.
a perfect example of having different conversations. And Destiny, you could have done a four-hour show on this. You could have had me on for 2 hours. You could have had Joe on for another 2 hours. So, like,
yeah.
it's hard, right? Because we're trying to pack it into a this is a long-form conversation. This is
right.
a three-hour – this is a Joe Rogan podcast. This is – like,
yes.
that's what it's supposed to be, right?
Yes. And, brother,
yeah.
both of us are in
Vegas
now. And, by
the way, it's really
so,
hard not
like,
to
I
jump
can't wait,
all over
I can't wait
map
to meet you, like, in person as well.
You only have 90 minutes, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of
yeah.
hard, like, to not cover every subject. So.
Yeah, Joe, I heard you're in Vegas. We definitely will get together for sure. I'm
no,
actually
going to
be on
honor,
bro.
Can't link up
definitely.
Without me. No. No.
No, it's all cool. Like,
no.
You know, we're building for sure.
Yeah. No, but honestly, all right, to answer your question and to
yeah.
do it in a short matter, Destiny, is I would say that we have to keep having the conversations. We have to keep the open mind. We have to get rid of identity politics. I think identity politics are going to be the death of this country because it gets nothing solved, because it becomes Crips and Bloods again to me. Right.
Right. Oh my God.
It does.
I say the same thing. Republicans and like it's like the Crips and the red and the blues.
Right. It's showing us what it is, and that's what's crazy. But I also think that we need to get rid of the stigma, and I know that's hard, but that comes with the discussion and the dialogue. Cast that giant net. Like we didn't get a chance to get into some of the programs that Walk the Talk America does. And we can probably do that at another time because I'll always be here if you need me. But some of those programs cast a wide net, and I can give you examples of how those have changed. I can show you how it changed my 11-year-old's life. I can show you different examples where this goes into the community. I think it just starts. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a slow process, but it's going to be like seatbelts in the end. Most kids these days get in a car and they put on seatbelts. We cannot pinpoint one person or one thing. It just over the years we started conditioning ourselves to put on seatbelts, just like we will condition ourselves to deal with mental health and talk about mental health and get regular checkups and treat it like we do our physical health. You see what I'm saying? So that's my take on a joke. You might have something to add to it, but that's really how I feel we start. That's we're going to start there.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have no, like, input toward that because it's, you know, it's all about people. The only thing that I know is that music can change the moods of people and it affects the minds of people. The fact that through social media and also through music that we can break barriers, like, as far as countries, like, for example, we have some artists that are coming in from Canada, from Toronto, Emerson Tavares, you know, and Omar Lynx. And Omar Lynx, he's an artist that he's got the big Marshmallow song right now called Be Mellow. But they're coming in, you know, and everything is, I don't know, music to me, like it breaks barriers. I've been able to live in different countries, live in different places, work with different artists, and it's like see their viewpoints. It's like Canadians just started in the past few years having like more violence and more stuff, and it's like I gotta attribute that to, you know, those artists not understanding how to maintain control of what kind of they're saying on records. I mean, that's as, you know, politically correct without the Illuminati coming after me even more.
No, God.
Saying, you know, the truth. I know, it's funny. I got jokes. But it's the truth. It's like, you know, they're the biggest rap artist in the world is Drake. Okay, so can you imagine? You've seen what happened in the Olympics when,
you know
the United States college kids got beat, when we got beat in basketball in the Olympics. You understand what I'm saying? Like, they put the pros in. So it's the same thing. The having the biggest artist be a Canadian, and no fault to the Canadians or whatever, that's part of the bullshit. And like, you know, if you listen to the content that he's talking about, and this guy is not no gangster. He's not no nothing like great artist, but it's all like bullshit, I hate to say. You know, it's like an artist like Nipsey, an artist like, we have great records, and yet, I don't know. We got to end it right there. I got to give a couple shout-outs when I can. You know, we like he said, this could be a six-hour conversation. And, you know, we definitely will do this again. We definitely will build because, you know, through music, a lot of people don't got to suffer. And you know, it's part of the healing process. It really is.
All right. We're about to get out of here, but Joe, are you going to pay all my fines for your cursing?
I'm going to pay all the fines, and I'm not going to cuss no more. I want to give a shout-out. Let me give a shout-out. Hold on. Let me give a shout-out.
Are you paying fines tonight for all your cursing? Are you going to do that?
Okay, I'm going to pay the fines once I give the shout-outs.
Give your damn shout-out.
Shout-out to the brand-new studio, and I won't say what city it is, but guess where it's at. Me and DJ Slow, we got the brand-new studio popping off. You know, I want to give a shout-out to Scott Moody. You know, MoodyLight.com, which is we're doing production. I want to give a shout-out. I'm sorry, Dee Dee. I want to give a shout-out to my Toronto family that's coming out here, Emo Tavares, Emerson, who's the sickest drummer in the world, you know, and also Omar Lynx, who's, you know, with DJ Marshmello. What is the last shout-out, as I can say, is Mr. Polly Rockwell, Rock and Roll, Miss Gina DeCito, and you guys. Thank you very, very much. I'm glad that I'm here. It made no sense. Mm-hmm. If you want to know somebody with mental illness, hey, it's not me. Let's keep pushing.
Hey, well, listen, Joe, it was a pleasure talking to you. And we'll get together.
Let's build. I'll take you. Let's go to eat this week. Wherever you want to go eat, let's go eat and sit and talk. It's a pleasure. Destiny's my sister. I'm glad she puts up with me. You know, but this is really, 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 really important. My little brother actually is listening, and you know that really, really, and my nieces and nephews, I apologize for cussing, but that really means a lot, you know, and they're super happy that, you know, Destiny allowed me on her show. I really, really appreciate it. Dee Dee.
Yeah, Destiny, there.
I'm mad at you right now.
Don't be mad, but they're listening, and I know I cuss
Mike,
a lot.
Do you have any closing words you want to say, like, about your organization?
Yeah, actually, you can Walk Talk America is the name of the organization. You can find us on social media at Walk the Talk US. Okay, that's for Twitter, that's for Instagram, that's for Facebook. Basically, we're all about mental health awareness, suicide prevention, and destroying the stupid stigma that has been put on mental health for the past X amount of years. So just please go to like us, and then if you like what we do, either donate or spreading the word is just as good. So, you know, go to Walk the Talk US. Thank you. So thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Beautiful.
Of course. And it was an amazing show. I want to thank you guys for coming on. Joe, you owe me $20,000.
I know. Go to at Church of Joe, all social media, donate for my fine, and it's all good. We believe in service animals, pit bulls, and Belgian Malinois. Let's keep the music rocking.
And what's the point with Destiny Williams? I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Love you guys. Have an amazing week.
Love you guys. Mucho, mucho.